Today we're going to finish chapter 19 of the Gospel of John. Welcome to our study here on the Radio Bible Course. The Bible tells us that two men, Nicodemus and a man named Joseph from the little town of Arimathea, came and claimed the body of Jesus and gave it a burial. And it says, now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden, a new tomb where no one had ever been laid. So because of the Jewish day of preparation, as the tomb was close at hand, they laid Jesus there. Do we know where that tomb is? Not really, nor is it important. One thing you will learn from Bible reading is that the apostles and early Christians were not concerned about holy places. None of the apostles who were Jews ever made a pilgrimage back to Mount Sinai. They didn't feel that would do them any good. There wasn't any value in it as far as they were concerned. Now, we go to Mount Sinai as tourists to see the place so we can become more familiar with the surrounding territory and perhaps better understand the Bible. But the early Christians gave no thought at all to any of the so-called holy places. For example, Jesus was born in Bethlehem, and while we visit Bethlehem to see that little town and the surrounding countryside, we do not know where Jesus was born. That is, which cave he was born in. There are a number of caves there. But if you go to Bethlehem, they will take you to the Church of the Nativity, beneath which is a cave with several entrances. And there on the floor of the cave will be a star, marking the place where they say Jesus was born of Mary. I'll give you my personal opinion. No one knows where Jesus was born other than God himself. And anyone who points out the place where they say he was born is doing God a disservice, because he is venerating a place that would take people away from worshiping God in the Spirit. What's important about Jesus is what the Bible tells us about him, not where he went, but what he accomplished on our behalf. We don't know for sure the place of the crucifixion, although we have a description here. Wherever he was crucified, it was near a garden, and in that garden was a new tomb that had never been used. And that's where they buried him. Now, the gardens in those days often had a wine press in them. And the gardens back in those days were not flower gardens such as we would have, but rather a place where fruit trees and grapevines grew. There is a place in Jerusalem, interestingly, that fits this description, but that doesn't mean that that was the place where Jesus was buried or that he was crucified. On the north side of the old city of Jerusalem is a place called Gordon's Calvary. Years ago, the British general came to this place and found a hill that looked like a skull. It had several cave holes in it that looked like eye sockets. And it looked so much like a skull that he began to consider, could this have been the place where Jesus was crucified? And then they found, right next to the place, a garden. And in that garden, a wine press and a water supply. And they began to put two and two together and concluded that this could well qualify for the place where Jesus was crucified and where he was buried. But even today, the Britishers, who are in charge of that beautiful garden, do not claim that this is the place where Jesus was buried. They know better. They are Bible students. And their purpose in maintaining the garden, which is indeed a beautiful place, is so they can bless people and give them an opportunity to meditate on the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And with the tours which I have led to the Bible lands, people have commented that the visit to the garden tomb was the most inspiring of all the places we visited throughout the Holy Lands. Now, it was customary for people in the first century in the Holy Land to chisel a shaft in the cliff and place the body in that narrow opening and then seal it. The tomb of Jesus, however, was not a shaft. It was actually a room that was carved into a cliff. And from the Gospels we learn that the tomb did not consist of a shelf in it or a bench for the body, but instead the body was placed on a chiseled area in the floor of the tomb. This meant that at each end where the body was placed was a ledge. And we are told that when the disciples came to the tomb on the first day of the week, two angels were seated on those ledges, one at the head and one at the foot, where the body had been placed. The tomb must have had a low entrance because the text tells us that the disciples had to stoop to look in, and that, of course, was to be expected, for it took a lot of work to chisel out all that stone. And there was no need to have a high entrance way. Such tombs, by the way, were closed by rolling a heavy round stone along a groove in front of the entrance. The members of the Sanhedrin were not satisfied to have Jesus out of the way. They went to Pilate and asked that the tomb be sealed and a guard placed there to ensure that no one stole the body and then claim that he arose from the dead. Here's what we read in Matthew chapter 27. The next day, the one after preparation day, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate. "Sir," they said, "we remember that while he was still alive, that deceiver said, 'After 3 days, I will rise again.' So give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal the body and tell the people that he has been raised from the dead. This last deception will be worse than the first." "Take a guard," Pilate answered. "Go, make the tomb as secure as you know how." So they went and made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting the guard. This causes us to be reminded of Psalm 2. "Why do the nations conspire and the people plot in vain? The kings of the earth take their stand and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against his anointed one. Let us break their chains," they say, "and throw off their fetters. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath, saying, 'I have installed my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will proclaim the decree of the Lord. He said to me, "You are my son. Today I have become your father. Ask of me and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. You will rule them with an iron scepter. You will dash them to pieces like pottery." Nothing could keep Jesus from rising from the dead. Even the Pharisees knew that he had said that. And God is going to fulfill his purposes with his Christ, for he has determined that this Christ, the Messiah, would someday sit on David's throne. That was a covenant that he made with David in 2 Samuel chapter 7. And the word of God cannot be broken. So it was necessary for Jesus to rise from the dead, and no amount of sealing or soldiers could prevent him from coming out of that grave. Well, here we see another fulfillment of prophecy when he is buried in Joseph's tomb. For in Isaiah 53, we are told, "For he was cut off from the land of the living, for the transgression of my people he was stricken. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death." This is a reference to the rich man's tomb. Well, in teaching the Gospel of John in a class, I got this question. Why is it that many of our leaders are not believers, and yet the Bible tells us that God has placed leaders in authority. Well, I think the answer to that question comes from 2 Corinthians chapter 4, beginning with verse 3. And even if our gospel is veiled or hid, it is hid to those who are perishing. The God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers, so that they cannot see the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. Now here it talks about the God of this world, and I think that's one reason why very few officials in government know Jesus Christ as their Savior and are disciples of His. The God of the world is controlling this world. It's in His hands. This is Satan who has blinded the minds of those who believe not. If Christ now were building His kingdom on the earth, that would not be the case. But, friends, Jesus Christ is not building His kingdom. He is building His church, and the world is not going to get any better. It is going to get worse and worse. We should not expect that the church will Christianize America or any other country. Instead, we are told to go preach the gospel, not so God will change the world or change nations or change governments, but so that God can save those who believe the gospel. That way Christ will be building His church, and when His church is completed, He will come again and take us to Himself. We need to understand that the United States is not a Christian nation, nor was it ever a Christian nation. Furthermore, nations can't be Christian. Only people can be Christians. Nations can't believe, but people can. And all through history, there have been people who have believed. You can expect some to believe, but not many to believe. That's the way it will always be. Jesus has always had a small flock. But size has nothing to do with it. Beware of evangelism programs that talk about being big and reaching millions and millions of people. Friends, that just is not going to happen. Except when a false gospel is being preached. A gospel that promises people something. Perhaps an experience or prosperity or some other kind of material benefit. Now, here's a very important announcement for you from the Radio Bible Course. The Radio Bible Course is attempting to measure its audience on this station. Our only means of measuring this is by postcards or letters from you. Please write to us this week if you want this Bible teaching to continue on this station. Did you know that this program is a ministry of volunteers? They are all laypersons in the Baton Rouge, Louisiana area. Because we have no payroll, all gifts to this ministry are used to pay for these broadcasts and our free publications. No funds are used for salaries or benefits to anyone. Please let us know if you value these broadcasts, and do send us the call letters of your station. Until next week, this is Nick Calavota reminding you that the word gospel means good news.
Our address is Radio Bible Courses, Post Office Box 14916, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 70898. The website is rbcword.org.